Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to a brand new series of Talking Point. 2022 is finally here. We finally managed to see the new cars running in a race, and Bahrain was an excellent one to start with, I thought. Charles Leclerc taking his first victory since 2019. Ferrari, first 1-2 since Singapore in 2019. They got a maximum points haul at the start of a brand new season, and that's something that the Scuderia fans will have been wanting for a very, very long time. A double retirement for Red Bull this plenty to get into. And I'm delighted to say that the first person joining us today is James McKenzie from Formula Nerds. James, welcome to Talking Point. How are you?
Hi, I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. So what did you make of it all? It was a race that kind of started off with a bit of drama. It kind of looked like it was going to peter out, and then a late safety car brought everything back to life again. I think we've heard that one before, haven't we?
Yeah. It was great. It was, I think, exactly what the sport needed. It was, from my point of view, what I needed after, you know, the what we've gone through over the winter. It was a great reset, and it looks like the rules are going to potentially have the impact that they're supposed to have.
That's it. Ross Brawn spoke really sort of excitedly about how the new rules came in and how everything looked for the first race as well. That's signs are pretty encouraging, aren't they?
Yeah, no, definitely. There was, you could see that there was less sliding about in the dirty air of the cars in front, and obviously we had that massive battle for, you know, three laps between Charles and Max. It definitely looks like it's going to be the way forward.
Let's hope so as well. And the competitive order, you know, how much difference does that make, having like two teams actually competing at the front, considering Mercedes made such a bright start to the last era, and it was pretty much just a private battle between them, wasn't it? So to have Red Bull and Ferrari at the front makes such a difference to us as fans more than anything else, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was worried from certainly the Bahrain pre-season test and then somewhat Friday practice that Red Bull and Max were going to run away with it, because Ferrari have promised so much in so many pre-seasons and then under-delivered a bit when it actually came to the real season. So I was just waiting for Max to kind of pull out that extra half a second, and then it would have been, yeah, at least with, you know, the Merck dominance years, we had Lewis versus Nico, but I think it wouldn't have really been Max versus Checo. It would have just been Max. So yeah, no, it's great to see them both at the front, and maybe Mercedes can join them.
And it was a great race just overall as well, wasn't it? I mean, like Carlos Sainz sort of complained about being quite far off the pace, and then in qualifying, he managed to pull that back a bit, but Leclerc just looked to have that kind of edge, didn't he?
Yeah, I think if you look at kind of over the 2021, obviously Carlos came out slightly on top, but that's just consistency, and that's what Carlos does. Charles' highs were lower and his lows were lower, but I think at least on raw pace, he seems to have that edge. I'm sure it'll change throughout the season.
Another example of teammates going into the season as friends, and then if they start competing for titles, yeah, who knows what could, we know that story, don't we?
Yeah, definitely.
Now we'd like to bring in Oliver Harden, who is going to talk through our post-race conclusions. We've touched on Leclerc already there, Oliver, and he looks like a man reborn, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. I think there's been risk that fans have taken him for granted a little bit over the last few seasons. You know, he had that wonderful start to his Ferrari career in 2019, obviously winning in Spa and obviously at Monza. And since then, obviously, Ferrari were caught out with their engine tricks. And come last season, Sainz outscored him in his first season as a Ferrari driver, and people were kind of thinking, you know, where exactly is Leclerc heading? How good actually is he, you know? But I think driving an underperforming car over the last few years has only made him a more complete driver. You know, I think it's a good experience for any driver, because I think it teaches him to be more ruthless.
He already said after the race as well that he tried to be sort of clever in the way he defended from Verstappen too, and he managed to get him back at turn four a couple of times, and that shows the sort of racecraft that he's probably developed while he's been battling in the midfield too, because we're going to be more likely to be in the fight, aren't you?
Yes, he's always been almost like a kind of chameleon in F1 terms, because, you know, he doesn't have a kind of set style. He got a lot of criticism, if you remember, in Austria 2019. He may be a little bit soft when Verstappen overtook him right at the end. And then the next race in Silverstone, he fought Verstappen, you know, as hard as anyone ever has, really. So he's always had that in him. And, yeah, it was really exciting to see him, you know, overtaking him twice in consecutive laps at turn four.
And Verstappen tried to keep it clean in his words as well, which, you know, it's a long season ahead now that he's got that title. Do you reckon it'll be a case of sort of playing the championship game a bit more from him now that he's got that experience of doing so?
He must be disappointed at the end of that. You know, I think he was very serene at the end of qualifying. I think he knew he'd obviously had a very good Friday. His long run pace was extremely good. And I think at the end of qualifying, he was quite confident of flying away in the race. From the front, obviously it didn't work out that way, and he became extremely irate as the race went on. You know, obviously with the instruction not to push on his outlaps, and then as the car fell piece by piece towards the end.
Yeah, let's talk about Red Bull as a whole then. So a double DNF for them, three out of four Red Bull powertrains cars failing to finish as well. So that's not the best start for them overall. And you could tell that Verstappen in particular really wasn't happy with the way things panned out, because he immediately said that this could end up having ramifications for the title, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. I think there's an emphasis on Red Bull to strike when Mercedes are weak, because even though Leclerc won the race on Sunday, I think most people are still looking at Mercedes as the main opposition. And yeah, it's a really wasted opportunity actually to make some really good ground on Mercedes.
The irony here is that for all of Mercedes' struggles at the start of the season, Lewis never had this big of an advantage in points over Max last year at any point.
Wow, that's something you probably didn't really think about. And same with Verstappen's sort of laps led stats, isn't it? Like, he led more than half of the laps throughout the entire season too.
Yeah,
absolutely. So like Red Bull as a whole then, it's that's the sort of opportunity they can't really afford to waste, especially while they do have a quicker car. Do you reckon they can sort of pull it back for Jeddah?
I'd expect them to be honest, because, you know, the car was very quick. I think there's still a lot of doubt about whether Ferrari do have a car for all seasons, basically whether they can convert the Bahrain performance into every race. I would still regard him as the overwhelming favourite for the title, Verstappen. But Leclerc, excellent on Sunday, yeah.
And looking back at Mercedes as well, I mean, like, Hamilton did admit that they were quite fortunate to get P3 and 4, but it's an opportunity they took that was in front of them. And to do that while they're on the back foot as well, that's quite encouraging from their point of view, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a real eye-opener of the race. You know, I think just before the safety car, Hamilton pitted from being almost 39 seconds, I think, behind Leclerc. So that's a massive gap for them to close going forward. I think at the beginning of the season, at least until they get to the European season with, you know, essentially a C-spec car, it's about staying in the hunt and taking advantage of the variables, and there's no better driver to do that than Hamilton.
And what of George Russell then, James? He started with that P9 in qualifying. He probably overcooked it into turn one, didn't he? That left him so far behind, but he looked to recover pretty well, didn't he, in the race?
Yeah, I saw a lot of criticism of him, but it was a solid debut. I mean, I think so many people have overhyped him to some extent, or certainly hyped him up a lot. And a lot of people then have kind of gone the opposite way and, you know, said that he's not all that. I think if most people came in alongside a seven-time world champion at their debut at a new team and were within a few seconds for the most part. And yeah, he messed up his Q2 lap. He's not Mr. Saturday anymore. I think that nickname will probably peter out. But yeah, it was definitely a solid debut. And fourth from ninth, he did pretty much everything he could, the same as Lewis did with the car that we've got now.
And he was already, he's already said before how much he wants to be Mr. Sunday. So going up five places isn't exactly bad going, to be fair, is it?
No, definitely. It's, yeah, because people have wondered how good he is on a Sunday, which is potentially a case of him just out-qualifying the ability of his car the last 2 years. So yeah, well, no, we'll see. But I think he's got a bit more than we've probably seen.
And one more feel-good story of the day, Oliver, like Kevin Magnussen coming back to the grid after such short notice as well, and qualifying really well and taking P5 in the end. That's quite remarkable, isn't it?
Really is. Yeah, it's a sign that bringing him back, I think it's a sign that Haas is starting to take F1 a bit more seriously again. Obviously, it makes such a difference having a proper serious racing driver back in that car alongside Mick Schumacher after Mazepin last season.
No comment on that one.
He's just relishing, you know, is another chance in F1.
Yeah, absolutely. And he looked to be on the pace straight from the off as well, James, didn't he? That's, you know, considering he's had a year out of the car, that's really impressive from him.
Yeah, no, I think he shocked a lot of people. Everyone knows that, yeah, Kevin has got a lot of speed in him, but we didn't really see it towards the end of his career. And generally, he kind of had the edge on Grosjean, but yeah, it was a case of getting 16th rather than 17th. So yeah, it does make you question a bit almost how, obviously the Haas car wasn't great last year. We all know that, but maybe it wasn't quite as bad as we thought because, I mean, yeah, K-Mag's come in and immediately dominated Mick with basically no testing. And then we know Mick dominated Mazepin. So yeah, it'll be a much tougher benchmark for Mick this year, I think.
Oliver, what do you make of that, especially from Mick's point of view? I mean, it's a big year for him, especially if he's looking to impress Ferrari in the future. I mean, I know Sainz and Leclerc are doing such a good job, but he needs to beat Magnussen over the course of the year to put himself on that radar, doesn't he?
Magnussen has taken the shine away from Mick, certainly, isn't he? You know, everybody, I think, really wants Mick to succeed, obviously, because of the backstory, because of his dad, obviously. But I think there have always been question marks over his full potential, and I think for Magnussen to just walk straight into that team very short notice and outperform him straight away, fair enough, Mick was spun by Ocon at the start. Yeah, I think Mick's gonna have to go some to fight Magnussen.
He can raise his level, James, because like having a better driver alongside you surely brings the best out of you, right?
Yeah, definitely. We've seen that with teammates for the most part over the years. I mean, you get some who certainly alongside Max have just kind of crumbled, but that is arguably down to the way that Red Bull have managed the situations. But yeah, he'll have to raise his game. And we've seen equally like Lewis and Max arguably seemingly raise their levels when they were up against each other last year. It does tend to happen, especially when it's your teammate. There are no real excuses.
And lastly, unfortunately, Oliver, your last conclusion that was made was the fact that McLaren just like have to improve, don't they? That was quite a disappointing weekend for them, to say the least, especially considering how good they looked in testing too.
It really was. It's very strange how it's just fallen apart for McLaren after looking so good in Barcelona. I think the Grand Prix weekend was a continuation of the problems they experienced in the test with the overheating brakes, quite a chronic issue for them. And I think there's been some talk that they had to run in a compromised aero way to kind of manage that problem through the weekend. So I would expect them to be much improved in Jeddah. You'd hope that they would be. Otherwise, it could be a long season for them.
Lando Norris said he is expecting more pain to come, James, and that, you know, that's not really that encouraging considering they arguably wanted to take at least P3 in the constructors this year and possibly even more than that considering how last season went for them.
Yeah, and I mean, it's easy to forget they were top of the first day of the pre-season shakedown or whatever it's called, non-test at Barcelona.
Yeah. The test that wasn't a test, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Lando finished that at top of the timesheets and everyone kind of thought, oh, maybe it's going to be Ferrari and McLaren at the front. And it's, yeah, obviously they struggled with the brake issues in Bahrain and that's hampered their second test, only official test. I don't think anyone expected them to be struggling this much.
I mean, Daniel Ricciardo, P14, Lando Norris, P15. That's not the sort of thing they signed up for. I mean, Norris tried to keep some kind of brave face on it, Oliver, but that's going to be difficult to do if they're still like this five, six races in.
Yeah, it was weird how we changed from qualifying to the race, because after qualifying, he was like, this is very track specific for us. There were lots of high-speed corners in Barcelona that maybe flattered them. There were slow-speed corners in Bahrain, maybe that counted against them. On Sunday night, it was almost, it looked almost a bit lost, as if, you know, how could they get to the bottom of the problems? But I think there is potential in that car deep down, and I think they're going to start to extract that as the season develops.
Let's hope so for their sake as well. And let's touch on the Mercedes power unit as well, actually. Quite a lot of their power cars were running towards the bottom of the timesheets. And to say that Mercedes had the dominant engine for probably the last 8-9 years, James, that's a very, worrying yet surprising sign, isn't it?
Yeah, I was just about to ask what you guys thought of that. Because like you say, I think, yeah, there was a point during the race when the bottom six cars were Mercedes, the bottom four in qualifying were all Mercedes powered. I've heard rumors that it's the new E10 fuel that maybe doesn't kind of agree particularly with their power unit. I don't know if that's the case, but yeah, it's bizarre after what we've been used to over the last, well, since the start of the hybrid era.
Definitely. And to see that is, yeah, it's almost in a way a bit like when Ferrari was so off the pace in 2005, wasn't it? It's just it kind of jars you, doesn't it, Oliver?
Yeah. Mercedes, I think six of the bottom eight cars in qualifying through the speed trap were Mercedes cars, so that's an indication of the problems. I think it could almost be traced back to the loss of Andy Carroll in 2020, because there was a clear weakness with the Mercedes power unit in 2021. Obviously, Bottas, I think he had three good grid penalties in the space of 4 weekends in the second half of the season. That's almost unheard of in the hybrid era, at least. And after suffering with reliability last season, I think there's a few deficits on the performance side this time too.
And that's worrying in terms of the drivers and constructors championship too. Like, could they finally have that crown under threat?
Quite possibly, yeah. I think Perez is still very. It's difficult to bank on Perez, because even when, you know, Ferrari and Red Bull were still very clearly ahead, he was still, you know, getting passed by Magnussen, getting Hamilton at the start. I don't think you can trust him in the same way. And with Ferrari having an all-star lineup in terms of Sainz and Leclerc, I think that's not far off Hamilton and Russell as one of the strongest on the grid, sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, Oliver, what do you reckon is the sort of one big conclusion that came out of this race that may sort of translate into Jeddah and beyond? Because there was so much to take from the first race of the season, but do you reckon Mercedes' problems will probably continue on a bit longer?
I think as a big conclusion goes, I think it's that Ferrari are back, and they're properly back, and they're probably going to be winning lots of races this season, potentially mounting a championship challenge. I think the nature of the weekend, I think it shows that Leclerc deep down does have an edge over Sainz. I think there are a few little deficits in Sainz's driving style that kind of holds him back a little bit in the intra-team battle. So yeah, I would say Ferrari being back is a big takeaway from Bahrain, yeah.
And we'll look forward to see how that develops. Oliver, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Cool. So it's one of those, isn't it? The first race, it's so hard to tell over the course of the season how things are going to pan out, James. But it's going to be very exciting for us, isn't it?
Yeah, it's refreshing to see after, obviously, we've had 2019, 2020, just pretty much Merck dominance with Max getting in there, the old Hambot Ver that everyone knew so well. And then even last year, it was, you know, this incredible battle, but it was still Mercedes and Red Bull. And it's great to have Ferrari back in the mix again.
Yeah, absolutely. And every driver sort of performed differently in terms of their own standards. And thankfully, we have one of our writers on hand to talk through his driver ratings after the Bahrain Grand Prix. Welcome, John Wilde. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Henry. Yeah, glad to be back into the swing of the season.
And so, headlines from your driver ratings then. Charles Leclerc, perfect 10.
Had to be, didn't it? It was a faultless performance from Leclerc, I thought, over the weekend. Pole position, got away cleanly from the start. Was briefly challenged by Max, wasn't he, in that little duel on lap 17 and 18. But he saw him off and went on to complete the win with the fastest lap as well. So, yeah, very, very hard to fault a complete performance from him.
James, do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, it was very satisfying to see. I mean, last year was largely a case of Lewis avoiding Max. as a whole over the season. So it's nice to see, you know, someone really getting their elbows out. And as we touched on earlier, I think Charles is always going to do that after 2019 Austria. He didn't put a foot wrong, and he held his own. I particularly enjoyed when he kind of nipped back just in front of Max on that first lap battle.
Yeah.
The first of the laps that they were battling. I thought that was a great move.
Yeah, brave as well, considering the form that not just but Max but Leclerc's not been afraid to get his elbows out either in the past, has he?
No, definitely. I mean, they came together at that corner in 2020, didn't they? Mm. So yeah, no, it's good to see.
No, absolutely. Right, John, one question I do have for you. Why did Kevin Magnussen not get 10 from your point of view?
I probably would have just marked him down slightly just because of a couple of mistakes he made into turn one. He lost a couple of places there early in the race. But yeah, you're right. It is very hard to mark him down given the performance he's put in on his return to the sport. He's been like a breath of fresh air, hasn't he? He's come into that team to replace Mazepin. And he was much quicker than Mick throughout the weekend and looked like he'd never been away, really. And I just hope he can keep it up for the rest of the season and that the Haas can keep producing the pace that it did on Sunday.
That's it. They sacrificed the entire 2021 season, didn't they? And thankfully, that looks like it's had some kind of effect for them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the thing with Haas is obviously that they've got big support from Ferrari. They've got the Ferrari engine in the car now. I think the future looks bright for them. I think Mick Schumacher was interviewed after the race where he said that he wouldn't be surprised if they could even record a podium or two this season, which they might need things to obviously go their way, big style for that, with a bit melee at the start or a lot of retirement problems. But it's looking good for Haas. The third in the Constructors' Championship already, which is a position that he could have only dreamed of a few weeks ago. I doubt they'll hold on to it, but they're certainly looking in good shape for a production season.
Yeah, and that's extremely positive for them, isn't it, James? Considering, you know, just the amount of pain that they've gone through, and not just with everything on the track, but things off the track in the close season too. That must be such a tonic for them, if nothing else.
Yeah, and it had to be, really. It had to be after, like you said, abandoning 2021. If they'd still been at the back this year, wouldn't have been a good look. So it's great to see them back towards the sharp end.
And John as well, looking at AlphaTauri next, I mean, obviously Pierre Gasly retired in what he described as a barbecue at the back of his car. I mean, thankfully, you know, first and foremost, he was able to get out of his car okay. That's, that's the main thing to come out of that. And he could make a joke about it afterwards. But what, Yuki Tsunoda making up 8 places in the race?
Yeah, I'm glad you've mentioned Yuki, Henry. He did produce the biggest improvement from grid to checkered flag, didn't he? 8 places. Just repeating what he did at Bahrain last year, really, he had a fantastic debut there, didn't he? I think he overtook 3 world champions on his way to collect a couple of points on his debut then. And I just hope that Yuki can keep it up, you know, because obviously he didn't really build on that terrific debut last year. He started sort of crashing in practice and qualifying. There's sort of questions called about his actual future in the AlphaTauri team even, but they gave him a second year and he's made a really bright start. He's got a few points under his belt already, so let's hope he can keep that up.
So with that, why did you only give him 8 out of 10? Like, I've already seen a few pelters in the comments about this already.
Okay, I must admit I've not delved into those myself as yet, but
probably for the best in some ways.
Well, we are just starting out on it, of course, Henry. So it's the first time I've done it actually this week. So we're just feeling our way a little bit with it, but I'm sure we'll master it eventually. But hopefully there'll be some performances from Yuki later on in the season where we can give him even higher marks.
And looking further down the grid as well, like, who would you say were the biggest disappointments for you?
You've got to go with the two McLaren drivers. I mean, obviously they're very, very hamstrung by the car, aren't they? But Lando, I guess, would have to be disappointed with Daniel Ricciardo finishing ahead of him, which is a reversal from their grid positions. Aston Martin, we've not really touched on too much as yet. I mean, Nico Hülkenberg did as much as he could have done, really, I think, in the circumstances, given that he came in at short notice for Sebastian Vettel. But I have seen, I did hear a suggestion that he might still be in the car in Saudi Arabia next week if Seb decides he needs a little bit longer to recover. But I actually thought it was a really clean race. There was far more positive performances than negatives. Perhaps Fernando Alonso had a bit of a quiet weekend. He was outpaced by Esteban Ocon in the race. He'll be looking to improve in Saudi Arabia. But on the whole, I think a very clean, tidy race for the first one of the season with the new cars. And that bodes well for the rest of the campaign.
It's what we needed, wasn't it, James, after everything that's gone on the past few months?
Yeah, no, definitely. It was a breath of fresh air, I think, yeah. After the high controversy of the last 3 months and the Twitter wars and the general ill feeling around the sport, it was a great refresher. And I'm sure it will only build from here.
Yeah, and just building on John's point of Aston Martin there, James, I mean, they had such high hopes coming into the year, and that will massively put them on the back foot, won't it?
Yeah, it's ironic, really. They spent so many years as the plucky underdog, as Racing Point and Force India kind of punching above their weight. I mean, even back to Jordan, obviously. And now they've got the funding and they're going the opposite direction.
Not ideal for them, John, is it?
No, it isn't. But one other driver I think I'd like to give a quick mention to, if I may, Henry, is Zhou Guanyu. I must get his name the right way around. Zhou Guanyu. And Valtteri Bottas as well for Alfa Romeo had a terrific race. I actually thought at one stage the Alfa Romeo looked the quickest car on track. I thought they might have been able to make even more progress and finish even higher up than they did. I thought they were very interesting. But both of them had issues at starts and restarts. Valtteri Bottas in particular at the start lost a lot of places, tumbled down the grid, but he recovered really well to finish sixth. And given the way that car looked after the Barcelona shakedown, they've made massive progress, and the future looks bright for them, I think.
Yeah, and he's the only rookie on the grid this year, which is quite surprising in Formula One itself, because you normally see at least two or three. And like, I think he described the fact that he was speechless after the race as well to get his first points in Formula One at the first attempt. Like, how much of a confidence boost will that be for him?
Oh, it has to be a huge confidence boost. I mean, for me, I thought it was a performance very akin to that of Yuki Tsunoda last year, actually, in Bahrain, where he came in as the newbie on the grid and just didn't look out of place at all. He looked as though he'd been driving there for 5 or 10 years. It was an excellent performance. He was going wheel to wheel with Lewis Hamilton. He was putting in overtakes, came away with a point on his debut. Can't ask for much more than that. He's already looking like he's justifying his place in the team.
Last one from us on driver ratings, John. Like, who do you think has the most improvement to do? Most improving to do in Jeddah, not necessarily the team, but a driver overall.
We've got to look down to the back of the grid, haven't you? I mean, Nicholas Latifi qualified 20th and last, and didn't really cut much ice in the race either. Alex Albon looked as though he was well on top of the Canadian all weekend, and you know, there's. Nicholas Latifi does have his critics, of course, because he's referred to as a pay driver. He's the sort of individual, I think, who needs to raise his game, and otherwise he's you know, his place at Williams could potentially come under threat were it not for the funding. So he's somebody who I want to see a lot more from over the next few races.
And let's hope for his sake that he's able to do that. So John, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Henry.
There's plenty to digest, isn't there, James, with so much yet to be decided this season. And you know, we may as well just look ahead to next weekend, because there's still it's only a few days turnaround, isn't it? So there's not much time for the teams to improve, is there?
No, and that's obviously what Mercedes was saying. There's going to be no silver bullet in the next 4 days until they're basically back straight at it again. There are probably going to be very few new parts coming with such a quick turnaround, and it being so far away from all the bases. We'll see. I'm sure, you know, if they've got a real killer part to add to the car, then obviously any team is going to make sure it gets there. But it's a totally different track. Again, it's the world's fastest street circuit. So we could see the order jumble up again.
Oliver mentioned earlier on the fact that, you know, the McLaren sort of did well around the sort of fast corners in Barcelona. So hopefully for their sake, they might be able to be a little bit more of a factor around the edges of the points.
Yeah, I was thinking that myself earlier when he was talking about that, and Mercedes as well, because I know that in one of the interviews after the race, Lewis was saying that generally their strongest point has been fast corners, which I think was also the case last year. But yeah, he said that they obviously were struggling in a straight line, mostly with the porpoising, and then around the slow corners. So Mercedes could maybe push a bit closer to the front too. Yeah, and hopefully McLaren will get a bit more in the mix. Yeah, it could change everything.
And, you know, away from the track, there was obviously plenty said about, you know, the sort of mass execution that took place in Saudi Arabia recently. It was brought up with Stefano Domenicali about the human rights concerns there. And, you know, he was of the opinion that the sport could sort of highlight these issues. And obviously we saw some rainbows on the grid last year to sort of promote like LGBTQ plus rights. And like, would you hope to see the same kind of thing again in Saudi, just to, you know, just keep a spotlight on these issues?
Yeah, there has to be, because sports washing is such a delicate issue, and it's very prevalent at the moment. And yeah, to prove to the world that F1 isn't there just because of the money, they have to really use that spotlight, as so many people say, to push for good. And I wondered if that was the reasoning behind Alpine's livery switch. I haven't seen it officially, but the fact that they've gone full pink for the first two races, I don't know if that's anything to do with it.
To be honest, having seen the Alpine car launch and the sort of chair of BWT wearing sort of a pink sort of ascot around his neck and everything, I do wonder if that's probably like more to do with it, considering their sort of pink associations with cars before. But you know, you'd hope that the teams would do something to sort of highlight these issues, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I'm sure they will. They obviously have had a fair amount of support for Ukraine in various ways over the first race as well. So yeah, there's plenty to push for at the moment.
Yes. But heading back to the track for now, are you expecting sort of a resumption of the Red Bull Ferrari duel, as it were? And can Red Bull put those engine issues behind them?
Well, I hope it stays as it was, because that was pretty much perfect in terms of them seemingly being very much level over the course of the whole weekend. Yeah, like I was saying, everything could change, and I hope Ferrari don't just fall back. Maybe Mercedes can join the fight a little bit closer, at least, you know, get in the mix, maybe a Lewis or George nick into fourth place or so. In terms of the engines, we'll have to see. Again, it's not very long to fix the problem, if there is a persistent problem, which is obviously unproven as yet.
Fair enough. And there's still a lot of unknowns heading into the weekend ahead, especially because, as you say, it's such a different track with such different characteristics too. I mean, they've made some safety improvements this year, considering how blind some of the corners were, and that some of the walls have been moved back. And like, how important do you think that is? Because it did look a bit dicey at times last year.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a highly controversial race for various reasons, which kind of glossed over the fact that, yeah, there were such safety concerns over the race, because aside from a pretty heavy crash from Mick, which obviously set some of that controversy into action, it was mostly free of any dangerous events. But I honestly spent the entire weekend nervous. Like, I was waiting for something bad to happen. I'm glad to see that they've made a few changes. I think we'll see how effective they are.
Let's hope so. And right, I've put you on the spot now. Who's winning next weekend?
I will back Max to bounce back, I think.
Okay, well, get himself on the board for the season at least. And James, before we let you go, we wanted to discuss your F1 first. So this is going to be a little section where we just talk about your first memories of Formula One and how, you know, how it sort of influenced you really, and how much of a part it's played in your life. So first of all, what is your first memory of Formula One?
So I know that I watched before this, because there are photos of me literally in a cot watching one of the early Japanese Grand Prix, I think it was. So my dad was a huge F1 fan, and my mum as well. So I was brought up on it. My first specific vivid memory was Damon Hill winning the world title in 1996. I remember we were at my grandparents' house, and we'd recorded it because it was on at 3 a.m. Yeah. And we were watching it the next morning. I remember Jacques Villeneuve going off into the gravel when I was jumping about on the sofa as a little kid, and my dad was trying to not spill his beer, I think, but got visibly choked up at Murray's infamous lump in my throat line at the
end. Oh, you beat me to it. I was gonna see if you had a lump in your throat.
I was a bit young to have a lump in my throat, but I was very excited.
Ah, fair enough. And so was Damon Hill the first driver you supported? Like, did you have any sort of particular allegiance to a driver or team?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly supported Damon. I think, again, it was even younger, Nigel Mansell, just because they were British and winning and my dad told me to. But my first driver that I picked for myself, and I couldn't really tell you exactly why, was Giancarlo Fisichella. It was, I know, the year after that, I think this is the point where I picked him. Right. He and Ralph Schumacher crashed, I think, at Buenos Aires. Don't hold me to that. But they were on for a podium in the Jordan. And I think I felt a bit bad for him. And he seemed to have a lot of potential. So I was a Fissy fan for the first 10 years of my love of F1, from him being in it until Lewis joined, really.
Just how much of, like... We all have it with sport, don't we? These sort of early influences on us. I mean, your dad sort of making you support someone, you know, it's similar in sort of same vein to football, isn't it? Like, just, you know, how much has it, well, the sport has grown so much in recent years. Like, are you pleased to see that happen? Because, you know, I know with my friends, Formula One can be so Marmite, can't it? But, you know, sort of you either love it or hate it, but it's slowly coming around to more and more people enjoying it.
Yeah, obviously Drive to Survive has had a huge effect on that, and in general with the way that Liberty have run the sport. And it's got, so, I mean, I grew up being the only person I knew who liked F1, you know, as a child. None of my friends at school cared about it. Literally my entire school life, I don't think I had a friend who cared about F1. And now suddenly all these people have kind of not come out of the woodwork, but have suddenly found an interest in it, and the younger generation. And now I know a load of people who were last year, certainly in the major talking points, would message me going, oh, I was just watching the F1 and this happened. And what do you think about Max and Lewis and whatever else? And yeah, it's great to see. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword, because there's certainly, I think, been a more toxic environment on social media since the last couple of years, but that's kind of the nature of social media. I don't think we can blame that on the influx of fans.
Oh, and I don't know if you feel the same thing, but I mean, maybe it's just me, but I feel like a sort of certain smugness, like talking to people who've just got into it now, because I know more about it.
Oh yeah, I was at Silverstone, back in the day, watching this and that, yeah.
Was Silverstone one of the first races you attended? Was that, you know, was that sort of one of your first memories of seeing Formula One live?
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of too young to remember it. I know when I was very young, we went to Silverstone, I think maybe just for practice or qualifying. And yeah, my mum likes to tell me how I was there as a 3-year-old or something, and pointing at Gianni Morbidelli and confusing all the punters around us, that there was a little kid who knew the Minardi driver by the design of his helmet. But yeah, I think we went there, and then I know that I went to Spa on a whim when we were actually traveling around France, again, when I was very young. And we just, but we obviously got the very cheap seats, and we just sat in the trees and couldn't see anything.
Oh, fair enough. But thank you very, very much for joining us today, by the way. So you're from Formula Nerds. Like, how are we able to find you on the internet?
Yep. Well, it's formulanerds.com, which you can find all the latest F1 news. And we have two podcasts. We have the Cut to the Race podcast, which goes out on a Sunday after each race, and a midweek news one called News from the Nerds, which I'm the co-host on. And that's probably the best place to find us, and all your usual social media.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if we've got the better pun or you for our podcast, but you know. No,
they're both good.
Yeah, we'll say that. And so, James, thank you very, very much for joining us, and I hope we'll see you soon.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. Don't forget, for Planet F1, you can find everything you need to know on planetf1.com, and you can find us on all the social media platforms as well. So we are at planet_F1 on Twitter. You can just type in Planet F1 to Facebook, and you can find us on Instagram as well. So thank you very much for joining us for this this first edition of Talking Point for the 2022 season. Hopefully there's plenty more to come, and we will look forward to speaking to you after Saudi Arabia.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
In my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.